Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf HaYomi. Avodah Zarah Lamed Hey, we begin 10 lines off the top of the Amid. And we jump right back into the cheese discussion. In the Mishnah, it was mentioned that cheese, gvinois based on yaiki, the cheese made in this town by the goyim, are forbidden for us to consume, according to Rav Meir, to the point that it's even asur b'hanah. As explained yesterday, that is for a concern that the rennet agent used in the curdling and the congealing of the milk in the cheese making process was perhaps derived from eglei avodos kochavim, so calves which had been slaughtered for the sake of avodah zarah offerings, which are asur b'hanah, in which case anything found within them carries that same status of isur hanah, hence it affects this cheese. That's according to Rav Meir. But as we learned, that was only based on Rav Meir's opinion that we are cheshish lemiuta, we're concerned about minority percentages. So even though ultimately the problematic cows were only a minority of the sum total animals used in that town, nevertheless, we are cheshish that perhaps you have encountered that material. Whereas according to the Rabbanon, although these cheeses are usher, but apparently for a different reason, because they hold that it's not asur b'hanah, it's only asur b'achila. And the question was, what's the problem with the cheeses? So actually, this was the a subject of a discussion back and forth between Rabbi Yishmael, back in the Mishnah, and Chavtesa Amud Beis, who asked Rabbi Yeshua, why? What's the reason for the isur of the goyish cheeses? So initially he said, well, the keva here means the milk remnant, the enzymes, the rennet found inside the keva, the fourth stomach of the animal, was used as a stabilizing agent, as a curdling agent in the making of this cheese. And, the animal of a goy is considered a nevela, non-kosher, and therefore it's asur ba'achila. Well, he says, why would that be a problem? Keva is just a waste material, doesn't relate to the actual animal, shouldn't be affected by the status of the animal. And he brought a riot from the fact that they would consume the keva material from an oila, which is asur bahano. Nevertheless, it wouldn't affect the status of this keva, would be totally permitted. So he went back and forth. Ultimately, he just switched topics. He did not want to conclude, get to the bottom of it. He siyo yudavar achar, says the Gemara, switched topics, and he moved on to no less than a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. And he says, my dear friend, how do you explain a pasuk, ki tovim doidecho miyayin? Now it could be translated both ways. Hashem is speaking to us, or we're speaking to Hashem. Hashem is speaking to us, lashon akeva, we're like Hashem's wife, so doidayech would be the way to pronounce it or to interpret it. Your closeness is very dear to me. Or we're speaking to Hashem, ki tovim doidecho miyayin. Asks the Gemara, what would that mean? My ki tovim doidecho miyayin. What would that mean? We're speaking to Hashem and addressing him like that. Ki asur Rav Dimi. So when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he explained the meaning of the pasuk as follows. Omro Knesset Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Jewish nation turns to Hashem and addresses him, Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the World. Arevim Alai, they are sweet to me. Arevim means sweet. Divrei Doidecho. So it's Loshen Yachid, to you, right? You, Hashem. Your beloved ones, Rashi explains, it's a reference to the Chachamim, who are Hashem's beloved ones. Divrei Sofer, which means the Torah, extrapolated by the Chachamim from the Psukim, from the Torah Shebiksav, the interpretations, explanations, the halachos derived by the through the Chachamim are sweeter to me. Yois from a Yenish Torah, even more than the core of Torah, which is the wine of Torah, Torah Shebiksav, because Torah Shebaal Peh requires effort, toil, tremendous investment of energy, of resources, and that's something which is very dear to us, because we come to it. We come to the true and deeper understanding and clarity in Torah. Through our own work, our own effort, our own Mesiras Nefesh, and therefore it's even dearer to us than the original, you know, Torah Shebaktav, in a way, right? So this was the point of the pasuk, and that's what they were talking about. How to interpret the pasuk, and then the question is, what relevance does this have? What connection does this have to our discussion on hand regarding the apparent gzeira? There was a decree, an isser, that was established and by the Chachamim with respect to cheeses produced by goyim. Ma'ishna haikra de shailis. Why did he ask him about this pasuk? Pasuk. Omar Reb Shimon ben Pazi. V'itema some say Reb Shimon bar Ami. His main message, main point was a reference to the beginning of that pasuk. Mireshe de kroka amale. He was hinting to him. So take a look at the beginning of that pasuk. So Shir HaShirim begins with Shir HaShirim, Asher Shleimoy, right? And the next pasuk is Yishakei Nimi Nishikais Piyu Ki Doivim Deidecho Miyoyin. So Yishakei Nimi Nishikais Piyu, Hashem should give us His kisses, His closeness. And there's a hint in those words. Amar Lei. So Rabbi Yishoh was in effect telling Yishmoel Achi, my dear brother Yishmoel, Chashayk Sifseisech, like when he kissed you, lock your lips together. Chashayk Chashayk, sifsei secha zoi bezu. Lock your lips together. Close your lips. Val tevahel lohashiv. And don't be motivated. Don't be drawn to this discussion. Regarding, sort of questioning and asking the reason for for the Isser of Gvinois Akum. What's wrong? My time, what's wrong with asking? I mean, Torah is full of questions, right? Why this, why that? We're just trying to understand, right? Amar Ula. V'yitema some say Rav Shmuel bar Abba. It was Gzera Chadoshahi. Since it was a recently enacted Gzera, Gzera Chadoshahi ve'en mefak pekinbo. We don't delve into it for the time being. We leave it around for a while, let it sort of get saturated, let's get absorbed within the community, let them adopt it as part of their, everyday practice, and then you'll start asking and questioning. And soon the Gemara will explain, because there was always that concern that by questioning and sort of challenging something new, it can lead to sort of the weakening of that takana. When people see that there are, questions, unanswered question marks, and all kinds of reasons that were given that they perhaps disagree with, right? So that could empower them to sort of negate and disregard this gzera. So no questions asked for the time being until it gets fully, established. It becomes routine, and then, sure, we'll have a discussion. So the big question, fine, today, nowadays, we can ask, right? So why? Why, in fact, my gzera, Russell, what was the reason? What was the basis for the Isser of Gvinais? What's wrong with the cheeses produced by a guy? Especially since we know that there's no issue of non-kosher milk, because that would never congeal. That's the way Hashem made it. Milk from a non-kosher animal does not congeal, doesn't curdle into cheese, into right? So what would be the concern? Ma'gzei Rasa. Omar Shimon Pazi, Omar Shimon Levi, Mishum Nikor, there's a safety concern. Personal safety, we're concerned about the milk. So when that cheese was still in its liquid form, perhaps it was exposed, left open for the animals, for the insects, for the snakes that may have come and have a drink. And that snake may have deposited his venom. We know there are three mashkim, three liquids. Pose a concern of gilui. We learned this the other day, right? Mayim, yain, and chalav. Water, wine, or milk. And the goyim aren't very particular with these things, so we're concerned that perhaps the snake may have dumped his venom into this. It's called nikor, by the way, because nikor means to peck, right? Like you're a manaka, an animal, you cut it open, right? So the snake sort of pecks at certain types of food, so it's just a term used to describe the visiting snake. asks the Gemara, "Velemelim shunikur." Okay, that's a pretty simple, straightforward answer. So why don't you just reveal it to him? Why do you have to sort of hide it and divert the topic? And the answer is the Ula, the Ula's Ula tells us, "Ki gazri gzeiras marav." In the West, Eretz Yisrael, when they establish a new gzeira, they keep it mum for a while, for 12 months. Lo yimugalu taima, they would not reveal its reasoning. Atresi achishata, until 12 months are over. Dilma ika inish, because if you do divulge, perhaps there'll be somebody out there with a differing opinion. Va'asi lizil zuliba, and they'll come to disregard it. Okay, but the real reason is because of Nikor. Megadef for Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah was not unhappy with this reason. Elamiyat, if that's the concern, then Yivesha Tishtri. What if the cheese is now all dried up, all congealed? It's a solid block of cheese. Apparently, there's no venom in there. It wouldn't allow it to become such a dry solid. Yashan Tishtri, if the cheese has been aged, gotten to the point that it's called Yashan, that too would indicate that it's free from any venom. Why? Because that's the nature of this venom. It wouldn't allow its material to age or to dry. D'amar Rabbi Chanina, Yabish Mutar, Emanichal Yabish, if the item dried up, it's perfectly permissible. No danger factor, because the snake, if it would be in there, wouldn't allow it to dry up. Likewise, Yashan Mutar, for ages it's okay, for the same reason. Emanichal, the venom would not allow the Yashan to age. So how could you say the concern is snake venom if you have a hard block of cheese fully dry? Amar Chanina, I'll tell you, it's a different reason. Because every cheese inevitably has some crevices and cracks and little holes, which contains some liquid residue. And as Rashi explains, cheese produced by a goy carries that, you know, ongoing concern that perhaps there was non-kosher milk mixed into that cheese. So although the non-kosher milk itself wouldn't congeal, but that's why you have those holes with full of liquid, says Rashi. Perhaps the goy did mix in some non-kosher milk. You'll never know what's going on in those cracks. And you can't really, clean it out. You can't determine what's what. You know, it's mixed with whey, with all kinds of, So ultimately, the issue is because it may be non-kosher milk. Tosis asks, Akashi says, why would the guy in his right mind, if he's planning on turning it into cheese, why would he mix in non-kosher milk, which would just end up with a salad, a mess, right? He says, "Goy is a shaita hava. He's deranged. Sheirav b'yichal of tamei. Why would he have an interest in mixing in non-kosher milk? Ava bishu yudei sheni oimid. Even though it's not going to work. So Rabbi Tam has a different pshat. He says, when the Gemara gives us this reason of tachzuchi chalav, he means to say that it's relating back to the reason of the snake venom. And since inevitably the cheeses have some cracks and some places where there are liquid." It could be filled with venom there, so pretty much relates back to the original, the first reason. So that's one or two reasons why gvinos are asur. Here comes a long list of additional reasons and concerns why we abstain from gvinos akum. Ushmuel Amar, he says, "Mipnei shemamidin oisa boir kevas nevela." See, initially we spoke about a concern about keva. Keva there meant the milk remnant inside the stomach of this animal, the rennet, the enzyme, whatever. And that wasn't, we concluded that wasn't really a concern, because that's considered pirusha ba'alma, it's just a way of, waste, it's separate from the animal. Here we're speaking about the actual oir of the kevas nevela. Shmuel holds that the concern is that perhaps they use the actual skin, the oir, the skin of that stomach, which apparently does facilitate congealing of milk into cheese. And that can't be dismissed as merely pirsha ba'alma, just waste. It's the actual animal from the nevela, so it's asher, because it's being used to produce this cheese. But again, it's only because we're speaking about the oyer. Hokeva gufa sharya. So basically what you're saying is that the actual keva, meaning the milk remnant found inside the keva, hokeva gufa sharya, would be permissible, because, as we said earlier, it's just pirsha, it's just waste material, doesn't get the isser of the animal, of the nevela. Really? Umi amar Shmuel hachi? Is that so, that according to Shmuel, the keva material inside would be okay for consumption? But now we have a Mishnah, which seems to indicate otherwise. Keva, so'evet kechav mishal nevela. You have the keva, again, that's the milk remnant inside the stomach, from a goyish slaughtered animal or from a dead animal. Harizu asura, it's forbidden. Now the obvious question was, are these two cases? Avinuman, the question was asked, why are we sort of listing them as two cases? It's really one and the same. Atu do'evit ki'chavim lavin ve'elohi? An animal slaughtered by a guy, isn't that, in its very essence, a nevela? Because it's not halachically valid, right? The shechita is not halachically acceptable. But Shmuel explained, you're right, it's one and in the same case. Chalak tani, the Mishnah means one case. Kevas, so the rennet found inside an animal which was slaughtered by a guy, which is a nevela, right? Shechita is avicham nevela, is asura. So apparently even the rennet found inside is asur. Whereas today we're saying otherwise. Rennet is okay, just don't use the actual skin. Like Kasha, the answer is kan kledem chazara. The Mishnah in Chulam, which seems to indicate that it's forbidden, is prior to Rabbi Shua's retraction. And now Mishnah, right, he was asked regarding the cheeses, and he said, well, he was concerned about the non-kosher rennet. And then he asked him, what do you mean? But the rennet, anyways, not a problem. So before he retracted, meaning his original position that rennet is considered part and parcel of the animal and attains the status, the prohibited status of the animal. So that opinion is reflected in the Mishnah in Chulin, Kan Acha Chazorah, but now, Shmuel's most recent statement by us, that rennet itself is not an issue, despite its non-kosher origin, based on the final position that Rabbi Shua took in our Mishnah, that in fact, it's just pir sheba alma, it's waste, it's separated material, it's not part of the nevela. Hence, the concern is not because of the keva, rather, concern would only be if they use the oy or the actual skin of the animal. Mishnah was as a mimkaima, so although there was a retraction, but that's the way it is. Once the Mishnah in Maseches Chulin has been established and taught, very difficult to retract it and to cancel once everybody's learning it, so we left it alone, but in fact, there was a retraction. So again, according to Shmuel, concern is because of the skin, the hide, the actual stomach material used in making this cheese. Rav Malchi Mishmei de Rav Adab Rav Amar. Here's another reason to keep away from non-kosher cheese. They smear its surface with non-kosher material, b'shuman chazer, with lard. Rav Chizda Amar, another reason. They use chaymetz, wine vinegar, which is asr even bahana, if it's taken from a goy, right? So this goyish prohibited material is used to be mamid. Mamid means to congeal, to curdle up the cheese. Rav Nachman Ritzak Omar, a different reason. Ipnei, Shemamid and Oisa, they process the cheese with something else, Bisrafa Orla, with sap coming from an Orla tree, which is Asr Bahano, Kiman Ki Aitana. So is this only in line with the Tana Rabbi Elezer? This non, we have a Mishnah of Elezer Omer, Hamamid, if one makes cheese, Bisrafa Orla, with sap coming from an Orla, it's Asr, Meshub Peri, because even the sap is considered part of the fruit. As we know, orla only covers the fruit material, so that's also considered like a product and a fruit, and it's asur to be used. But according to Rabbi Yeshua, it would be allowed? No, I feel that even Rabbi Yeshua would agree that sap from an orla tree is prohibited. Why? Ad kan, like Paleg Rabbi Yeshua, later Rabbi Lezer, because Rabbi Yeshua only disagrees with Rabbi Lezer's isur. Ela bakat for the guzav, it's a sap coming from the leaves of an orla tree, right? Sorry, because of the guza, says Rashi, Bistraf Hayitzim and Eitz, coming from the bark, from the wood. Well, that's inedible, that's not considered food material and not covered by Arla Isra. Aval Bakata the Peira, but if it's a sap oozing from a fruit of Arla, Maidi, even he would agree that the material is Asr. That's not, this is in line with the Mishnah, which says, Am Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua himself is speaking, Shemati Beferish, I have clearly learned, Shamamet Bistraf Arlan, if one produces this cheese using sap, this acidic sap coming from the leaves of an arla tree, ubisrafe karn, or from the bark, right? So that type of sap is mutar, because it's not coming from an edible source. Bisrafa pagan also, but if it's coming from, the cheese is being produced by the sraf, the sap coming from the unripe figs of the arla, it's coming from a fruit, it's also, of course, it's off limits, because it's the fruit, right? The sap has the same status as the original fruit. That would explain why Gvinas Akum is Asr. Now, according to this reason, that there's an Orla component, which is Asr Bahano, likewise, according to Rav Chizda's reason, that they use vinegar, wine vinegar, which is also Asr Bahana. Then the cheese of a goy should not only be Asr Ba'achila, it should be Asr Bahana as well, because Isra Ana extends into the cheese. So that leads us to a question. Bein l'Rav Chizda, Bein l'Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, according to these opinions, Titzer Bahana, cheese, is not only Asr Ba'achila, as the Mishnah had told us, it should even be Asr Bahana. You can't sell it, you can't have any Ana, Kasha. In fact, we leave it as a question mark. We're not sure why the Isra did not encompass Hano'a as well. Says the Gemara, Darsh of Nachman Breda of Chizda. Okay, on the Shir HaShirim track, I have a question regarding Shir HaShirim. Maitech said, what does the pasuk in Shir HaShirim mean? This is the next pasuk. L'reach Shmanecha Toivim. So the reach, the fragrance of your oils are pleasant. Who spreads his knowledge and teaches, what's that comparable to? Let's lay the payotan, this container with fragrant perfume. Megulav, it's left uncovered, and it allows for the distribution of that pleasantness. Reicha noidev, so the fragrance, spreads around and all benefit from it. Mechus, but if it's sealed and covered, and the chachma is not passed on further, then nobody has any benefit from his knowledge. Ein reicha noidav, the fragrance doesn't get spread around. Le'oid. So if he goes and passes on the Torah and teaches, it's a huge schus, and it actualizes his abilities. Le'oid, furthermore, he's a special heavenly assistance. El'advaram shemechusim mimenu, things which are typically hidden. The secrets of Torah, which are typically under wraps, mizgalon lo'i, are revealed to him by Hashem, shenemar alomai sahivucha. And this is learned as follows. Kori Bey, we read it as though it would be Alumais. Hidden secrets of Torah are presented to him as a reward for his efforts. V'loyoid, furthermore, Elo Shamala Chamoves Oyhava, even the angel of death seeks his friendship, Shenemar Alomais Eivucha, and that's learned, Kori Bey, we learn it, Almoves. Alomais is like Almoves, the angel of death. V'loyoid, furthermore, Elo Shenechlo Shnei Alomais, he inherits both worlds. He has a good life in this world, full of light, full of meaning, full of value, and certainly Elam Haba as well. Echad Elam Hazeh, Vechad Elam Haba, Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Alamois, and we read it, Kori Bey Al Olamois, a double world. Okay, so just in a quick nutshell regarding Gvinois of Eved Kecham are Asur Ba'achilam, not necessarily because of a concern that they may have used non-kosher milk, because that wouldn't turn into cheese. That wouldn't congeal, as the Gemara later will tell us, just by nature, by very nature, Hashem made that the chalav tummy is not oimid, cannot congeal, cannot harden. So the concern is primarily because of perhaps non-kosher curdling agents or some sort of additives, or for safety issues because of the gilui and the nachash. So in fact, that's what we do today. We refrain from gvineis akum unless it has a reputable hechsher, which will ensure that in fact it only has kosher ingredients, kosher stabilizers, kosher curdling agents, and in fact, the reputable kosher agencies would require that a yid actually physically produces the cheese, inserts the curdling agent. This is in line with the shita of the shach, that's the only way to consider it gvina of Yisrael, and that would be the only way to sort of circumvent this iser of gvinus akum. There was a gzera, keep away from any gvinus akum, unless produced by a Yisrael. Interestingly, Rabelski Datzal would point out that this sort of insurance that the Gemara presents later, that once something is congealed, it would signify that it's not made from non-kosher milk, because non-kosher milk cannot possibly congeal. He says, well, it's not really relevant today with all the technological advances. They use all kinds of, synthetic stabilizers and curdlers and rennets and all kinds of stuff that basically allows you to make anything from anything. So that factor cannot be reckoned with as part of the equation. In any case, continues the Mishnah of Elu, some contrast to the previous Mishnah, which mentioned items that are even Asr Bahano. Here we have items from Goyim, which one may not eat, but there's no Isra Hano. Some of them for concern of non-kosher, components. Some of them for concern of chasnus, because by partaking in their food, their bread, their cooked food, it might lead to a closeness of hearts and social interaction, which might lead to intermarrying. But these are only asr ba'achila. One can buy it, you can sell it, you can have anna. Ve'elu dvorim shelo kicham, the following items from goyim, asurin, are forbidden for consumption. Ve'ein isuran, isurano, but not for anna. First item on the list is chalav akum. Cholav shechalav kicham, milk produced by a goy. Ve'ein yisrael re'i, without a yid supervising. So if a yid supervises the milking of the cow, that would no longer be forbidden. That would ensure that there's no non-kosher components within that milk. He didn't mix in anything from a non-kosher animal, you know, to top it up. And that would be considered Chalav Yisrael. Many are familiar with Ramesh Feinstein's tshuva regarding government, you know, government inspection system, which more or less ensures that they haven't mixed in other milks. So he says it's something that could be relied on, but he says it's only out of necessity, b'shas adchak. He himself writes that he personally would not partake in that leniency. He would be meticulous about drinking actual Chav Yisrael with a Jewish mashgiach, and he advises all to do the same. Yerei Shamayim should be machmer. In fact, there's a letter written to the community here in Toronto where he writes very strongly. He says, you know, they're trying to establish Chav Yisrael production in Toronto. Everybody has to participate, even if it costs more, even if it's at a greater expense. He says, the heter that I give is only, you know, it's out of necessity, if it's really, you know, if you're stuck, but ideally you should be actually be makbid on true Chalav Yisrael, milked under Jewish supervision. But in any case, that wouldn't, even the heter of Rav Moshe would not address Gvina, which is a totally new Isser, totally new Gzeira, for many reasons discussed earlier. We are there, you can't just pick, you know, cheese off the shelf. It has to be produced, looked after by Yidden. Okay, so that's the Chalav Yisrael. Vapas vashemen shalahem. What about the pas, bread, produced by a goy? Vashemen shalahem, their milk, their oil. These are staple items, which if partaken from, it would engender closeness and, you know, personal, you know, interaction, which is problematic. Now, in terms of this last item, the oil, Rebbe, Ubeis Dine, Rebbe and his bezn, hitira shemen. They allowed the shemen. They sort of canceled the isra of shemen, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So going forward, you can actually buy shemen from a goy. In fact, the Rambam brings that if one should choose to be strict in this manner, he says it's not advisable. He says he speaks very strong terms about him, because he says it's a halacha that was established, that it's mutter going forward. You can't just be machmer, contrary to the heter established by the chachamim. Vashlokas, foods cooked by a goy. So shlokas refers to any sort of bishul akum, and again, it's only something which cannot be eaten raw, something which is typically eaten in a formal setting that has chashivas, that has you know, importance, and that can bring closeness of hearts. Hukvashim, items which are pickled by a goy, what's the concern there? Shadarkin losses the seichon yain memela b'chaimetz. The pickled items, which are typically contain some wine, some vinegar, so it would be also due to its problematic content. Vitaris, that's a sort of small fish, like a sardines or something. Trufa, which had been mashed, in which case you can no longer identify if it was a kosher fish. Vitzir, fish brine. Now, it could be fish brine of kosher fish or non-kosher fish. So what's the indication? She'emba, well, you don't notice a duga, a little mini fish, kilvis, that's what it's called, a little fish, she'tetes, was swimming around in this brine. Interestingly, the Chachamim knew that fish brine, which is kosher, would attract this little mini fish, which in itself, by the way, is not kosher, to swim around in it, and that would indicate that it's kosher brine. Otherwise, you don't know. You have to be cheshish that it's non-kosher brine. So it has to have this dogal kilvis shetetes boy. Vachilik. Chilik we discussed yesterday is this little mini fish. So although currently they don't feature the kosher signs of fins and scale, but that's not an issue because they develop it as they grow up. So in this early state, they're kosher despite lacking the kosher signs. Problem is that there's another non-kosher species which looks very similar, and they get mixed up. They tend to get mixed up. So since you can't really, you know, differentiate between the two, you keep away from chiluk offered by a goy. The courage of chiltus, a piece cut off the chiltus, some sort of sharp plant. So the issue there is because the since it was cut by a goy, non-kosher knife, it may have had non-kosher residue on that knife. A melech salkundis, some sort of hard rock salt, again, since it was cut by a goy. So that completes our list. Hara'ilo asurin, all these items are asur, ve'in isurin isurano, but not for hana, only for achila or for shtia. First item was chalav, milk. What's the issue? L'may nechash, why can be concerned about non-Jewish milk? Imash mechlufi, that he perhaps switched it with non-kosher milk, with milk from a non-kosher animal. Well, you can easily tell the difference in terms of coloring. Tahir, milk from a kosher animal like a cow, chivar, is bright, is blanched. Tame yarek, coming from a non-kosher animal, is more greenish-yellowy. You can tell the difference. So there's no room for confusion. Vimish maruvi, oh, perhaps he's selling you kosher milk with a little non-kosher mixed in to top it up, right? In which case, the color is not discernible because it's just mixed in. Well, there's another solution for that. Take a sampler, take a little bit of that milk, put it on the side, curdle it up, and see if it turns into cheese. Nekum, get it to harden. Dabamar, we learned, chalav tahir oimet, only kosher milk congeals. Chalav tameinim oimet, not so non-kosher milk. You're right, says the Gemara, idu kaboy legvina. If he's looking to make cheese, turn it into cheese and see if it works. Hachinami, that would address the problem. My skin, we're speaking that he's not trying to make cheese. He doesn't want a house full of cheese. He wants it for personal use. He wants to drink it. He wants to dip into it. The kabayla the kamcha, he wants this milk for kamcha, like a dipper. Keep it in its liquid form. In which case, you'll never know what it is. So that's the more vinishkul minokali. Okay, take a sampler. Take a little bit. Right? So the first proposal was, congeal it completely. Well, he doesn't want cheese. Okay, so take a little bit. Kali, a little bit, then sample it. Vinekum, and try to make it into cheese and see what it's all about. That wouldn't really work. Why? Because even once you turn it into cheese, you know, cheese has a little bit of liquid in it. It has the runoff, the you know, the watery, the whey, right? So you'll never know what it is. Is it really kosher whey? Or is it not the non-kosher component in this kosher milk, which could not congeal? So you'll never know. Even the betur nami, even in kosher milk, which turns into cheese, you can assume you have the nesuba, the whey, the loikami, which doesn't harden. So then you'll never know what this is. Your little droplets in your cheese, it could be this, it could be that. Lekala mekum lemusi, you can't really determine what's what. Furthermore, says the Gemara, I feel the kaboyla legvina. Okay, so now even if we try to turn it into real cheese, if that's what he wants it for, it's not going to help him because of those droplets, which may be problematic, maybe a problematic origin. Ema the kaybeiniato, we're concerned that in every cheese you have these little cracks, you have these holes, which inevitably contains some moisture, which could be either whey or could be the horse's milk mixed into the cow's milk. Speaking about horse milk, you know, the famous story took place in the, read in the book about the stories about Sfardish Rabbanim of old. So there was this big kiddush on Shabbos in Chalav in Syria, and they served everything, including the majedra, all these fancy, you know, exotic dishes. Some of them contained milk. And it was sitting right in front of the Rav. And the host was offering it to him. He says, I'm making a kiddush, you know, come, enjoy, here, take it. And the Rav, he wasn't noticing it. He wasn't partaking. So the host realized something's amiss, and he told his fellow, take it off the table. After Shabbos, he went back to the Arab farmer who sold him the milk for that product. And he says, It was amazing. It tasted delicious. Could you give me some more of that milk? He said, I ran out of the donkey milk. So basically, he had mixed some donkey milk into the thing, and the Rav, due to his elevated status of holiness, he didn't notice it, and that's why he didn't partake. He just felt that it was something not for him. There's another famous story with I think the Maram Shik, one of the Ashkenazi Gedolim. So he's paying a visit to somebody, and they offered him a drink, poured him a glass of milk, and he's sitting there and he's having a discussion, and he's not partaking in the milk. So his host asked him, well, you know, if she make a bracha shak, he says, well, what shak, what do you mean? He says, well, here's a glass. He says, where's the glass? Turns out he didn't even see it. And it was discovered that it was not kosher milk, and he said, oh, that's the Mishnah. Cholav shel chovei akum, Ve'ein Yisrael re'eyu. If it's non-kosher milk, a yid doesn't see it. He doesn't see it. Okay, continues the Gemara. Va'pas. What about bread produced by Yigoy? Amar Rav Kahan, Amar Rav Yechanan. Don't think it was cancelled. This Isser is still intact. Pas, Lohutra Bebezn, was never permitted through a Bezn. Mechlal de Ikaman de Shari, mean to say that there's an opinion which claims that it was allowed by a Bezn. It, yeah, the Chiyasar of Dimi. Amar, he said, Pamachas, it so happens that once, Yotze Rebbe Lasad, the Rebbe went out to the Sada, to the field, and he encountered a guy who offered him this most beautiful loaf of bread. Pas, a loaf of bread, purni, made in this sort of a big commercial oven, mafes, so, weighed a ton, weighed a saw. Amar Rebbe, so Rebbe, in response, made a comment, he says, Kama, no, pasu, look how nice looking this bread is, why is it even asr? Ma ro chacham lo isr, why did the chachamim prohibit it? What do you mean, why? Says the Gemara, ma ro chachamim, why? Shum chasnas, we're concerned about intermarriage. Since bread is a staple food, it forms the core of a meal, you're going to partake in his meal, it can lead to problems. Ella, rather, he meant to say like this, I understand why it's asr, but here it's out in the field, it's an unusual circumstance to meet up with a guy offering bread in the field, it's not going to lead to any closeness, it's not your typical setting, right? Elamaru chacham lo iser besada, why the chachamim prohibited it out in the field? That was his sort of, comment. Now, those who were listening and watching misunderstood his comment, because people who heard this about this encounter, they interpreted it as follows. Hit the Rebbe apas. Rebbe allowed eating goyish bread. Veloy says they were incorrect. Although he made this comment, he didn't mean it, lahalacha. Rebbe lehiter sapas. He never meant to allow bread. Rebbe Yosef, v'yitema Rabbi Shmuel bar Yehuda Amar. He had a different version of the story. Rebbe never went that far to indicate that goyish bread is mutter. Like hachayamas, that wasn't the story. Ela amru, rather was as follows. So it was said that Pam Achas Halach Rebbe Lamokim Echad. Rebbe visited this town. V'ro pas dochel k'tamidim. And he saw that the Talmidim, the Torah students, were having a hard time. There was barely any food to eat, barely any bread. Amar, he says, Amar Rebbe. So Rebbe responded, En kan palter. There's no bakery in town. What's going on? Where's the bread? Kasvur and Ham Leimar. So people misunderstood as though he was referring to a non-kosher bakery. And he was allowing that. Palter Eid Kichav Mbulay Amar. No, he never meant. El Palter Yisrael, he meant the Jewish bakery. He never meant to even indicate, to allude in the slightest that non-kosher, pass of a goy is mutter. Amar B'chelvoy, Afilu Mando Amar Palter Eid Kichav, even according to the opinion that he was alluding to the Geisha bakery and allowing that, by the way, Tesis brings that based on this Gemara, some actually do allow pass of it, Kichavim. In any case, Allah has brought down that if you're stuck, right, if there's no Jewish bread available, you can actually have Geisha bread provided it was produced by a Geisha bakery in a commercial setting, so there's no, doesn't have that personal element which can lead to personal interaction. As per the next line of the Gemara, so afilu lemanda omar palter oivet kichavim, even those who understood that he was allowing the goyish bread loyamurn elikal palter yisro, that's only if there's no Jewish bakery around, there's no alternative. Ava mokim dikal palter yisro, if you have a Jewish bakery around, lo, it wouldn't be allowed. Rabbi Yechon omar afilu lemanda omar palter oivet kichavim, he adds another point that even if you allow bread produced by a goy, that was only out in the field, in a non, personal setting, but if it's in town, you can't, because it could lead to intermarriage. Aivu, that was his name, Havamankis, he was biting, and eating pas, bread produced by a goy, and the Mepharshim explained, this wasn't commercially produced by a bakery, it was privately produced, pas of a goy, balabayis, a private person, and he was eating it nevertheless, Abe Mitzri, walking along the boundaries between the fields. Amalu Rabba. So Rabba was very displeased. He turned to the people. The Itema, some say it was Nachman Bar Yitzchak. He says, Loish Tishto by day. Don't have anything to do with him. Don't talk to him. Da'ivu. Why? Because look, he's taking the liberty, disregarding the Isser, he's eating bread from a goy, which is a no-no. Okay, so we discussed the importance of Chalav Yisrael, of Gvinos Yisrael, Pas Yisrael, Bishul Yisrael, and Shemen, which was initially Usher, and then the Isser was cancelled, as we're going to see by Hashem in tomorrow's daf. All the best to you, and Atzlacha Rabbah.